listening to the Picture House podcast with me, Karina Antrobus. Here we are talking about The Last Tree, out in cinemas on the 27th of September. And I'm very excited to be here with the director, Shola Amu, and the lead, Sam Adewemi. Hello, guys.
Hello.
So, in your own words, who's like to tell us what the film's about?
So, The Last Tree is a semi-autobiographical story about a young boy called Femi. He's of Nigerian descent and he's fostered in Lincolnshire by a white foster parent. And our story picks up when his biological Nigerian mother comes to pick him up from Lincolnshire to take him to live with her in South London, and he has to work out in his new identity in a new space.
Brilliant. And guys, it's been a long day and it's been quite a long week working on your wonderful film. So do you know what? I'm going to take a little step back and going to try something a little bit different and just have you guys talking to one another about the journey that you've been on and maybe ask each other some burning questions that you might not have had the opportunity to. How does that sound?
Sounds good.
Sounds good. Daunting, yeah. But yeah, why not? Let's do it.
What made you think I was right to play Femi?
You know, we went through amazing casting director Shaheen Beg and Aisha Waters sent us the self-tapes and we were going through all of them. And I remember, like, instantly when seeing your self-tape, there was just a level of naturalism and intensity simultaneously that was just resonating with me a lot. And I know it resonated with Lee, our producer, as well. And we, you know, it's one of those moments where you just kind of, you kind of knew something was stirring in the pot. But as I'm sure you'll bring up at some point, it took us some time to to let you know what was brewing. Extending this metaphor as far as I can go. But we were, like I said, like you were, like it was just very clear, like until the point where we were actually closer with all the building blocks of the production to have you self-tape again and have you in for the rehearsal or the audition. And you know, for me, it's all about energy. It's your energy just felt like it was so in sync with the concept of Femi and with additional things that hadn't even been thought of, to be honest. You know, that's in the character, but that's kind of what you want in terms of the evolution of a script to screen. You want someone who brings the character and some, and so you and that helps with that transition in my mind. So it was like a no-brainer. You know, I always say to you, in a sense, it didn't even feel like we selected you, you kind of took the role. It was very much yours for the taking and you took it.
What inspired you to make this film? Because obviously I know...
Man, you ain't heard me say this like 200 times.
I mean, I've heard it, but for the listeners at home, And also in this context, I guess, like, obviously it's something that you were developing for quite a while, four years ago, you know, so... And I know there was like an earlier sort of iteration of it. So like what made you, you know, kind of make this the story and like what's been the journey of it so far?
You know, well, as it's well documented, it's a semi-autobiographical film. And, you know, I was fostered and from a kind of, I guess, rural monochromatic space into a urban diversified one. And I was really interested in that transition. Cultural displacement, concepts like that. And I also took it upon myself to have conversations with other British Nigerians who were fostered. And that really helped me kind of use a bit of my story, use a bit of their story and create like a new narrative. And that's where I felt like I was really making a breakthrough because I was close enough to the concept, to the project. I was close enough with enough authenticity, but with enough distance or a degree of distance to have objectivity. And that's what was the right kind of format for me to tell the story. And the themes of identity and displacement and landscapes, transformation, all of that sort of stuff was really, I had the maximum scope to do it once I settled on that kind of collaboration of the story. What's it like for you just now being like, you know, star of tomorrow, And like, it's been announced now you're doing this great BBC America series, right? You got a really key role in that. And poster is your face all up. Obviously, you're all up in the trailers. You're like gonna be projected on the tube when all posters are like, what's that like? Cause I, as a director, I kind of move in the shadows. I'm not really visible in that way.
It's a good question, man. I guess I'm going for it right now. So I don't know. I might need some time after it's passed to like be able to fully reflect. But so far, I just feel very grateful for it, man. Like, you know, I'm still quite early in my career, and I was given the opportunity to bring your character to life, you know. And yeah, I guess that's come with, you know, some really nice recognition and some really nice positives. It's really exciting to be going into like a new thing that's got a massive fan base already from the books of Sir Terry Pratchett. So yeah, man, I'm just trying to take it in my stride, to be honest. I don't get too gassed off of things too quickly. Yeah. So, you know, it's just one of them ones. Like, you know, we've been working together for the past year now, like on this journey, and I guess I'm learning a lot from the way you handle things, because, you know, the film is beautiful, and you're being told the film's beautiful, and yet you still manage to maintain this sense of like groundedness.
But see, that's because I'm from South London, and we don't get gas. So I don't really know what your excuse is. I'm trying to figure it out. You're not from South, so you don't have that.
Sorry, it's just started these like postcode wars again. No, like
I should really be way past this. I mean, like 34, but
how
clearly,
old are you? That's your age.
But clearly, I like to devolve back into basic beef.
That's it. But yeah, but it's just It's cool. It's something I'm really, really grateful for. It's something I didn't really expect, especially not at this stage of my career. So, yeah, man, we thank God, we keep moving. It's all about the work at the end of the day. You know, if the film didn't come out well, or if my performance wasn't something that people were interested in, maybe, you know, this sort of thing wouldn't be happening. So you just give thanks, you keep going, you keep focusing on the work, and hopefully that will lead to happiness and joy and all the other things. And
but yeah. What do you think about potential, in the sense that, you know, it feels to me like there's no barrier or bar that you might not be able to reach. Like, it's open field, you know, the way people have experienced your performance and your abilities and what you can go on to do, and you keep such a level head. Like, what kind of level of professional acclaim ultimately will we be striving for? It feels like you can go all the way to the top, whatever that might be, or however people might perceive the top to be. Do you think about that? Is that like do you carry that weight, or do you just take it day by day?
You try to take it day by day, and then you do your first lead role, and then you're a star of tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, whoa, you know, you don't expect those sort of things to happen. It's crossed my mind. Naturally, before I went into this, I had aspirations and dreams of things that I wanted to do. But I think the longer I've been doing it, the more I realise, you know, it's not really about all of that stuff. I mean, it's great and you know, it's wonderful, and obviously it helps you to get the next job, or it helps you to be remembered in people's minds, and, you know, that's all great. But essentially, it is all about the work. So even if I did all of this stuff, what's to say in 5 years' time, you know, people are still interested? You don't know. You know, you've got to stay like focused on kind of what got you there. And then obviously you get to, you achieve certain things or certain goals, and then it's like, right, so what's next? You know, you can't just rest. And the industry's kind of like that, you know. So something I've been noticing is within like the press store, everyone's like, what's next?
You know, so, but you can say, yeah, BBC America.
Now I can say, do you know what I mean? But, yeah, man, you just take it in stride. I mean, you had a pretty similar story. You had some shorts at first, and then you did your first feature in a moving image, and then you did the other short as well, which went to Sundance for your first Sundance experience, and now you went to Sundance again. So like, what's that journey been like for you to kind of come from, I guess, relative obscurity to now having your film about to screen nationwide? Like,
it feels really good. It feels like it's been part of a plan now. Like, it's every, I keep, I keep joking with my friends. Every time we have conversations about what the plans are, I'm always like, well, this year has to be an improvement on the last year. Mm. And I think I've said that since, like, I don't know, 2007. So I think I've been saying that, like, consistently. It's been how to build the path to where I want to be with filmmaking and bigger canvas, more grandiose projects, all tied to the central core themes that I'm interested in. But that level of progression, I'm always saying that every film should feel like an evolutionary leap in, like, I don't know, in budget, but in concept, in scale. And I, already the leap between a moving image and The Last Tree is substantial. But they also had different aspirations in a way. You know, Moving Image was conceived, it's a multimedia film about gentrification in Brixton. It's conceived almost like it could play in a gallery as well as it can play in cinema, whereas The Last Tree is pure theatrical experience, you know, and focus on immersion. So I think because I have these plans, it's like I try to enjoy the milestones, but I'm always thinking about, okay, so it's a step closer to this, that, and the other. So that's why in all honesty, it's probably why I feel or seem very chilled about it, is because it's like, okay, I'm working the plan. So that's why it's an amazing thing. You have to take stock of it, but you also have to see it in the grander scheme, I guess.
No, that resonates a lot, actually. I think maybe I held back a bit in the answer, but yeah, it's with conversations with friends and, you know, close ones, you know, you're always sort of planning.
And, you're always planning, plotting, and
and have ideas of where you can get to.
How's it? What's your community like in terms of creatives, and how do they take and perceive your like apparent success or your success, like and what's that like? You know, you're a little younger than me. Like, what's that like in this kind of hustle, creative, everyone's trying to come up, and you have your crew, your people. Is everyone like, this is great, and is everyone supportive? Is there resentment? How does that work in your group? It's quite a deep question.
Yeah, it's a good question, man. You know what? From like time I was from the time I was like training, I had a very sort of specific focus. You know that my training is geared towards me just becoming a better actor. If I make friends here or in this journey, then great. And if not, that's also fine. You know, I've got friends outside of acting and things like that. So then, you know, from there to where I am now, you know, I feel like I did have a very strong focus on cultivating sort of a like-mindedness between myself and who I choose to like associate with. So, you know, right now in my circle, as it were, everyone's like really happy for me, you know? And I think that's because throughout all our journeys, we've been watching each other and encouraging each other and edifying each other. And, you know, I've got friends that are doing, you know, massive projects, you know, that, you know, and, you know, throughout the whole time that I've been watching kind of everyone's career take off, it's just about celebrating each other and just being grateful and understanding, you know, that just because someone else has got their blessing doesn't mean it's going to take away from your blessing or the blessings for you that are to come.
So, yeah, and I was wondering about that because it's interesting, you know, it's not as simple as, like, perception is a trick, you know. Someone may appear to be having, like the wildest time and whose career may be progressing in the most perfect way, but you have no idea of knowing what's actually going on in their head. You know, like what's their actual life like, you know, outside of, say, if they're online, a curated kind of Insta performance. You know, what are they actually? So it's hard to, so for me, I always find it hard when you hear about people passing judgment on people or hating, because you just don't know.
You don't know.
Your life might be better than that person's at that exact moment that you think that their life is taken off.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
You don't know. It's all perception, like you said.
It's all perception. Yeah.
it's not necessarily real, but it is the reality that you choose to kind of allow it to be, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why for me, it's always nice to see people being successful, you know, because especially in this industry and especially people that look like me.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, if my guy can do it, then that shows that it's possible.
It can be done.
It can be done.
It's better to think that way instead of the high, or call it the Highlander syndrome. Do you know what I mean? You see that movie?
No.
Highlander. It's like a, it was Christopher Lambert and Sean Connery. And I think it's about these immortals who go around fighting each other with swords, and they're fighting for the prize, which essentially is when they're down to the last one. He's like the winner of the prize. It was an interesting film because it was shot by the director who'd done a lot of like early MTV videos, because this was the day when MTV was emerging. And Christopher Lambert, who's Belgian, was playing a Scot. And Sean Connery, who's a Scot, was playing a Spaniard. it's a really strange film, but the one I go back to because it's hella fun. But the whole concept of there can only be one, that's why I call it the Highlander syndrome. Like where people think, particularly if you've been denied access to things in certain communities, and you think there can only be one who's allowed to be successful, so therefore you have to hate that one. And you can't. Which is your philosophy is a lot better. It means one is successful. It means there's space for everyone.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, if we make it real, you know, like where we are and the sort of faces that we've seen on screen, it's not like there's only one of that type of face. You've got like six or seven of people that you would probably call like the same guy.
Yeah.
But they're you know, unique and independent in their own way. And so we have to kind of look at ourselves as the same, in my opinion anyway.
Yeah, I hear that.
Here's a question for you.
Okay.
And I'm going to be like very specific. I want you to be very specific with your answer.
Let's do it.
Because I know you like to...
What's that?
You like to be...
That gesticulation...
I know.
You have to explain that gesticulation on the radio.
You like to answer questions almost like a politician. So...
That's never been said of me.
There you go.
Okay.
First time. All right, so... Especially with this question.
Okay, go.
Is there a scene in... The Last Tree that didn't make the final cut, that that you wish made the final cut?
Well,
and if so, what was the scene?
You know, Sam, in filmmaking, there are multiple scenes that don't make the actual cut of the movie.
And no so way.
So is there a scene that didn't make the final that I really... it's a tricky question in the sense that ultimately... Obviously, I feel like every scene that needs to be in the movie is in the movie. There are scenes that worked as standalone scenes, but ultimately did not play to the philosophy or the concept of the movie, which is subjectivity and following through on that. Great scenes that may have reflected certain other characters' experiences, but... For a film that is so tied to subjectivity and the lead's perception, to take you out of that felt imprecise in the sense, because you understand via his time, his process of understanding, instead of being objective and having a kind of God view and programming scenes that give the audience that it's all through his perspective. And that's really important to the central conceit of the film. So that's why I can't say there are scenes that I would want to put in, because it would fundamentally alter the concept of the film. That was not a politician's
answer.
That
was a very good answer. I might retract my statement one day. Cool. What about, let's get a bit more fun. What was like your favourite day on set?
Oh, favorite day on set. There's always gonna be the scene where Femi goes into Mace's kind of space in the estate, and you know that 4 or 5 minute one take we do when he's at the bottom of the estate, walks into the estate, gets into the lift, takes it all the way to top floor, comes out through the landing, gets into Femi's flat, into Mace's flat, sits down and starts a conversation. It's such a technically tricky scene to do in a take, and we only had two shots at it. And it required every crew member to be working at 110% to pull it off. And it was just the kind of, it was the zenith of teamwork, really. Mm. It was the most high version of collaboration, I felt, because everyone in that moment was fusing together to make, to hold this illusion and make it work. So that was very, I left that day feeling like, I don't know how to improve on this, on that moment in terms of, I don't know what sequence I'll ever direct that will fill that, I don't know what the word is that I wanted to say to describe it, but just that accomplished in that moment, I guess, that sense of accomplishment. And then the other days that were amazing were mostly in Nigeria. Mm. Every day was kind of like a dream come true, because it was always a dream of mine to go back home and shoot in Lagos and experience that. And I have to say, the moment with the Ifa priest, you know, like, we didn't cast an actor, we had an actual Ifa priest, which to some crew members was quite scary, because, you know,
too many.
But, you know, being Yoruba, and you can attest to this, is like, for me, in my family lineage, it's Ifa is a part of it. And, you know, it's not... the opportunity to show that in a different light to the way that it's been kind of, I guess, demonized to some degree was super important and super powerful. You know, he gave us both of us prayers at the end of that, remember, which was, can you imagine? Like, you both in Lagos, you were in Lagos for the first, Nigeria for the first time, just like your character.
Yeah.
In like, what was it? I think it was in Lekki, you know,
somewhere in the woods
getting a prayer from an Ifa priest after shooting those scenes. It's insane.
It's special, so it's a real moment,
like, actually. I don't know if that will ever be, that probably won't ever be replicated again, you know. It's just one of those life moments. So though, every day in Nigeria, and then the market, Yaba market, which was insane. It was like, it's the closest I got to experiencing being like a pop star like Justin Bieber or some shit, because you and Bemi were just swallowed by a giant crowd. And there was a point where we were trying to shoot almost like documentary fashion, but
I felt like it came across quite documentary.
It came across, but there were points where we had absolutely no control, like no control. It was like that was gone. That's not, you can't replicate that,
and yet you still managed to stay zen and grounded. And I think that's what made it like really special, actually, the whole Niger experience, you know, just in spite of the traffic and in spite of the things that we couldn't control, we still managed to do something really special and enjoy our time there, you know?
Absolutely. And that's my question to you, what was that like? I mean, the character's going there for the first time, but for you, first time in Nigeria, and when I remember seeing you on the beach, just like when you would take, that was just real.
It was all real, bro.
Yeah.
I loved it, man. I loved it. From the moment, like, you know, going back a bit, but from the moment like I got the breakdown of what was happening, and I knew Lagos would be one of the locations that we were shooting in, that got me really like excited. As much as I didn't know which way it was gonna go, it got me really excited. And then I think I was meant to actually go to a wedding that year when it came through, and I couldn't go to the wedding for work reasons and stuff like that. And then to come back a year later, and then I'm here in Lagos as part of like this film. And to just go in the taxi and to get on the Okada, on the motorcyclists and stuff, and, you know, to eat the bread and the nuts that they sell in the street, and to just like be kicking football in the street, and, you know, it's stuff that you kind of, for me personally, it's stuff that like I felt like would almost never happen, in a sense that maybe I wouldn't go until like I've kind of grown out of that sort of childish excitement. But yeah, that wasn't the case once we got there. It was amazing. The beach scene was all real, man. It was weird. It was very surreal. But it worked for the character, and it worked for me. So that was probably my favorite thing about the whole shoot, actually. Just Lagos, everything Lagos. That rap party was crazy as well.
Rap party. I mean, we had a rap party in London, and then we had a rap party in Lagos, and suffice to say, the rap party in Lagos was a bit more popping.
A bit more lit, do you know what I mean? Nigerians now to get it down.
Yeah, and also Myth. Yeah. Shout out to our producers dancing.
Yeah, everyone was getting it.
Everyone was getting it in.
Myth, Jerry was on his own. Yeah,
everyone was like, no one was like not dancing. Mm. Like,
yeah, it was a good time. As a filmmaker, what do you find to be like the most challenging part of the process? And maybe you can speak specifically about The Last Tree as well, from like pre to during production to post production to even this part of press and all of that. What do you think is like the biggest challenge for all the young emerging filmmakers that are listening to the Picture House podcast?
I think there's the obvious challenge of raising finance, which you hope gets easier every time. But then if the scale of your movies is increasing every time, it's always a kind of challenge. Mm. And I think development of the script is almost feels like the thing that takes the longest time. Mm. And then maybe inherently should, because when you're developing the script, you're in a space of infinite possibilities to some degree, depending on constraints. And it's when you hone that script to that final kind of like, and for me, that final space, but for me, the script's a blueprint, so I'm always free to be loose with it when we shoot, but ultimately that's the blueprint, that's the guide. I think knowing when that is can be that one of the hardest points, because you're still in that place of infinite possibilities. What I like about when you're in production is that you're delivering on those. Finally, you feel like you're delivering on those possibilities because you've distilled it to its closest form. Mm-hmm. And there's more, I use the term restriction, but in a good way. It's more like, okay, now it can only be so much. And I like that kind of process, because you're getting into, you've done all of this time, you spent all of this time on the script, to some degree, problem solving, but in a space of infinite problems. Mm. Whereas if you've done the work and you've ironed out some of those things, now you have, when you're in production, you have, I don't know, you have parameters, and it's a lot more like you're on a secure journey, because you've got the script, you've got the financing, and doesn't mean there's any reduction in creativity and spontaneity. But I just like that sure footing that you're in. Even though production is tough and each production is different, I enjoy the process of being in it so much, because you know you've got A, B, C, D, E to get done, and it's going to come around one way or another. But it's the parameters are set, but you know you're at least in a production, and it's work, and it's moving toward a direction that has a conclusion. And you're going to get there one way or another, and it's going to come down to your decision-making, how you get there. But I think when you're at script phase and before you're there, especially if you're developing something of scale, and you're even in that phase where you're like, oh, is it even going to happen? I think that's the uncertainty is, for me, that trickiest thing of it. But when you're in production, even though it can go supremely well or terribly, I feel like it's all down to your decision making, and you're in the flow of things, and that's quite exciting. Especially if you have the right infrastructure, then it's more exciting than if you don't. But like, definitely, development and finance are things that can see that don't really have an end until there's an end. If that makes sense. Yes. Yeah, I have a question. Because Karina gave me a look like we're not finished. So you're about to go abroad for like what? Like
for a while, yeah.
For a while to shoot this show. Mm. Do you think the future of your career will predominantly reside abroad, like actors such as Idris Elba, David Oyelowo, and other Black British actors? Or do you think you'll be predominantly here, or do you think you're going to try and straddle both? Because there are those who say to meet a certain level of ambition and scale, going abroad is inherent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, I mean, when it comes down to it, I'm a London boy, do you know what I mean? And so, like, London's always going to be home, essentially, as well as maybe finding my home in Nigeria as well, because that's, you know, where I'm from. But, yeah, in terms of, like, the work and my career, growing up, when I was young especially, a lot of my favourite actors and people that looked like me that I saw on screen were from the States. And so naturally you had like this element of, oh yeah, you know, to make it and to be a working, you know, actor of scale, you have to be in the States. And I guess with time moving on now, you know, and with where we're at, you know, we're here talking about a film that we've done, and that's of scale, and that's going to have posters and places. And so I'm realising a childhood sort of dream in that sense. So, yeah, I guess there's a balance. I kind of just have to see how it goes. I think naturally I'm probably going to go there. I think I was watching one of my favourite actors. I was watching a sort of interview that Daniel Kaluuya had done. And he was like, you know, it's like going from secondary school to college. And from college to university, it's like, yeah, all right, cool, I've done secondary school, but now I'm ready, you know, I need to make that step. And over there, you know, there's bigger budgets and I guess a lot more stuff being made. And I think, you know, here in the UK and in our industry, we kind of have to look to that to see how we can now scale up and allow, you know, the provision of opportunities to everyone, you know. So, yeah, I think naturally I'm already doing it. I'm doing a series with BBC America. So, yeah, I guess without really trying to, you know, direct my energy in that way, things are kind of working out in that way because that's just the natural progression of things, I suppose. But obviously I'd still love to do stuff here because this is where I'm from and I feel like stories here represent myself and the people that I've grown up with and the people that I know. And if we get filmmakers, more filmmakers like you that are willing to kind of push the boat out there and not necessarily make the typical, stereotypical stories that we've seen and continue to create layered, interesting characters, then our actors are naturally going to want to create work here, regardless of whether they're massive in wherever, in the States or wherever, you know. It's like, it's all about the work, essentially, for actors. So wherever the best work is where I want to be and is where I'd assume a lot of actors want to be. But, you know, we're still young and things are getting better and improving, which is great. So hopefully if you ask me that question in, like, 5 years' time, it'll be like, it don't matter where I work, you know. It doesn't matter whether it's London or, you know, LA or whatever, you know. It's just about the work. Yeah, that was a long way to go about the answer.
It was basically, the answer was yes.
But your word.
I appreciate the process.
I could ask you the same question, but I think we're
running
out of time.
You're out of time.
Yeah,
so talking about the work, when is your film out?
So The Last Tree is out on the 27th of September.
Excellent. And we're going to be screening it far and wide across the UK in all cinemas worth their salt. You can check out your nearest screening at thelasttree.film. And for now, we're going to say goodbye. But before I do that, I just want to give a big, big shout out to the Silk Factory, proud supporters of the Pitch House podcast. Silk Factory are an awesome film marketing agency making the coolest trailers and the creative content out there for TV, digital and social platforms. Do check them out. We think they're great. So you can check them out on thesilkfactory.co. That's thesilkfactory.co. Thank you very much.